This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show being brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. Six great flavors of slushies, pickle bar, led by my two personal favorites, the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. It's also your tailgating headquarters. It is always great to be joined by the incomparable Phil Steele. My friend, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Hey, a real pleasure, Steve. I got to ask you, is your entrance theme always Enter Sandman or just after Virginia Tech games?
It always has been for about 12, 13 years now.
I've used Enter Sandman.
So it's been there. You know, and the oddity is in 2020, Penn State was scheduled to play at Virginia Tech. Now, I've done basketball games at Virginia Tech. But, of course, that game in 2020 ended up being on the cancellation list. So I've never done a football game in Lane Stadium to hear Enter Sandman.
I tell you what, to me, it's one of the best entrances of college football.
Oh, I agree. That's why I was looking forward to it so much. Like, really? Doggone pandemic, Phil. All right. They don't do that for basketball. But football, it's so cool. All right, so here we are at this stage. Midway through for Penn State, about the midway point for almost everybody else. So what has been your take? We'll start with the home team first, then we'll start spreading out. What's been your take on Penn State to this stage?
Pretty much as expected. You know, I thought the West Virginia game, the right before the half, getting those key big pass plays, I think was key to them taking control of that game. The Illinois game, not quite as dominant as you wanted, needing a late score to win by 14, but you look at games statistically, they had a 374 to 219 yard edge. Probably the one game that would concern me would be USC, trailing the majority of the game, down by 14 at half. But I like the way they rebounded and came back and won. The defense is playing to expectations, holding opponents to 113 yards below their single season average. The run game has looked really good. Last 2 weeks struggled a little bit, but you know, Singleton and Allen are a dynamic combo and getting more big plays than last year. And Drew Allar at quarterback, while he's got four interceptions, which doubles the total from last year, yeah. I've been pretty impressed. So overall, I'm very happy with what I've seen out of Penn State, and they're pretty much as expected.
What's interesting is we're at the stage of the season now, Phil, where there are going to be some teams that fall into the two-loss pool, which means to me they have to be perfect the rest of the way. One could end up being Georgia. Definitely one of Alabama or Tennessee will be when the weekend is over with. How interested are you in that two-loss pool once this weekend comes and goes?
Yeah, I think we're definitely going to see two-loss teams make the playoff this year, no doubt about that. The question is, will a three-loss team make the playoff? But I think, like you mentioned, once you lose that second game, you do have to play perfect the rest of the season. We'll see some teams weed themselves out of the mix. You know, a couple weeks ago, it seemed like Tennessee and Mississippi were locks to make the playoff. Now, with a couple of losses and maybe upcoming losses, they may be out of the mix. So it's just a lot of fun at this point. And I still think we're going to see the majority of the playoff teams are going to come from the SEC and the Big Ten.
So let's get to the SEC. Texas is going to take, they've got Georgia. Texas is number one, and it's not as if they've been unscathed. Quinn Ewers has been out. They've had to come up with other running backs. What has impressed you about Texas?
Well, just overall the way Yeah, the way they take care of business. I mean, every single opponent they have beaten just like they should have. They don't really let up on anybody and haven't played down to the level of their competition at all. So you got to like that. I guess the one thing I'm wondering about with Texas, I know their defense is playing extremely well, 230 yards per game, holding opponents to 129 yards per game below their season average. But my big question is, who have they played offensively? Probably the top offense they faced, at least statistically this year, is UTSA. Everybody ranks in the lower part of the standings. Now they're taking on a pretty good offense in Georgia. I'm really interested in that part of the battle.
Yeah, I am too, because Carson Beck has had some big games to this stage of the season, and we know Georgia has talent. But at the same time, when you watch the first 2.5 quarters of the Alabama game, what concerned you about Georgia when they played Bama?
Overall, with Georgia this year, it is the fact their defense is not as dominant as it has been in recent years. I think that's probably the biggest thing that jumps out to me. Go back to last year. They held opponents to 102 yards per game below their season average, which was number one in the country. Now, this year, they're actually number 25 in the country. And, you know, a top 25 defense is nice, but with Georgia, you're accustomed to them having a dominant top defense, probably the best defense in the country. So that's my biggest question mark at this point is their defense going to come around and start playing like you would expect Georgia? I think Georgia's a national title contender if their defense is in the top 5 or 10, not if their defense is in the top 25.
What helped me out is on the trip back from Los Angeles, we did have TVs in the plane, so I could watch Ohio State play Oregon. The interesting part to me, and I want to get your read on this, a long time ago here, Penn State 1982 plays Nebraska. And Penn State won in the final seconds on a touchdown pass from Todd Blackledge to Alan Bowman's father, Kirk Bowman. And Penn State wins the game. But it was a game if you were there. Penn State had two touchdowns called back. Penn State missed four field goals. He even missed an extra point after the winning touchdown. Right? They could have won the game by a lot more. I watched Oregon and felt the same way, that they had stuff. They made so many mistakes. They took points off the board. They actually could have, in my opinion, could have won by more. Did you share that same opinion?
Yeah, I do. I also think, you know, you could say Ohio State could have easily won the game. So it's one of those things. Yeah. But I came, you know, the one thing, Steve, that jumped out to me in this game is coming into it, you expected Ohio State to dominate the line of scrimmage, right? Because they've got one of the top offensive lines, one of the top defensive lines in the country. I thought Oregon had the offense and defensive line edge, and they were without their top defensive lineman coming in, and with Birch being out for the game. I thought it was huge coming into the game. So I thought the line of scrimmage, I would agree with you in that factor, that Oregon played a better than expected game. And you have to give them the quarterback edge in something like that. I mean, Dillon Gabriel is one of the top quarterbacks in the country. Will Howard is good, but I don't think he's Dillon Gabriel.
No, and I agree. I think that makes a big difference, especially I feel like Gabriel makes great decisions. He's accurate with the ball. I love his decision-making, and decision-making includes times when to run the ball. Him.
Right.
And I think that makes when you do that, especially in the red zone, defensively, you have to commit somebody to Gabriel. If you have a guy that's a pocket passer, you don't have to.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at Oregon at the start of the year, they were sort of interchanging their offensive line a little bit, because against Idaho and against Boise State, they weren't dominant. They gave up 7 sacks. They only averaged 3 yards per carry. But they finally got the offensive line rotation up to the standard I thought they would be coming into the year. And they played a lot better the last 4 games, and I think that's been the difference in Oregon's offense and makes them a legitimate national title contender.
Okay, so I'm going to turn the clock back to early in the season with Oregon. They played Boise State. Ashton Jeanty had more yards individually rushing in the game than Ohio State did on Saturday night against Oregon by about 52 yards. The group of five is going to get a team in. What's been your thought on Boise State, and what's your thought on him as a running back?
Pretty electric. so many big plays and big runs for Ashton Gentry. And, you know, like you go back 2 weeks ago against Utah State, he had all his yards in the first half, didn't even play in the second half. So in the magazine, I had Boise as my number one group of five team to make the playoff this year, and they've made me pretty happy. I think they're going to live up to that. Now, they do have a tough test coming up where they play UNLV next week on the road. That's probably the biggest, well, it is the biggest, toughest remaining game that they have on the schedule. But if they take care of business against UNLV, I think it's between Boise State and Tulane for that spot. Tulane's been pretty impressive as well this year. But right now, I'd have Boise number one.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the Friday night game. So that's going to be the UNLV-Boise game. To me, that's a must-watch. But let's get to it, an undefeated that nobody's talking about, Indiana. All right. They're undefeated. I'm not saying that they're going to get anywhere, but what's been your thought on the job that they've done there?
It's pretty much what I had expected. Not quite to this degree. Well, probably to this degree. In fact, you know, in the Big Ten media poll, Indiana was picked 17th. And everybody asks me every year, Steve, they say, Phil, do you have a favorite team? And I go, yes, I have a favorite team. And they go, who is it? I go, it's a team I picked higher than everybody else. So as it was, everybody picked them 17th. I had them 12th in the Big Ten. Yeah. And there I hedged my bet a little bit, thinking, well, I can't pick them any higher than that, can I? But I've been an Indiana fan all year. They're playing great defense. They've got all those James Madison transfers, and they've lived up to that potential. They've got the run game with Ellison, Lawton, and Black. Curtis Rourke, who was the MAC Offensive Player of the Year 2 years ago, looks like it. He's hitting 74% with a 14-2 ratio. Now, keep in mind they haven't really played anybody. Maryland, probably the toughest opponent that they played. They're going to take on a really good opponent this week in Nebraska. Nebraska's got a legitimate defense. Hutmaker leads that defensive line, which is just nasty up front. And I like what I've seen out of Dylan Raiola as well. So I think we're going to learn a lot about these two teams this year. Indiana's having a great year. Cignetti's doing a great job. And, you know, the thing I like about Cignetti, Steve, is that in the transfers he's brought in, they not only had to have experience, they had to have, like, be a conference player of the year experience type of thing. So he brought in the right guys. I think the NIL money that they promised Cignetti at the start of the year really helped.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And for Nebraska, they've only lost the one game to Illinois, and it was one of those games where I felt like they lost the game more than, quote, Illinois won it. So Matt Rule's done some good things there. Now let's get to a team that lost on opening day, Clemson. Clemson was behind, I think, 6-0 at halftime, because I'm trying to do that from memory only because I was doing the West Virginia-Penn State game at the time. They have not lost since. Now, I realize they're not facing, quote, murderer's row, but what do you think of Clemson now at this stage, and how dangerous are they to get to the playoff?
No, I think they will make the playoff this year, and you're absolutely correct. It was 6-0 at the half, close game. And what happened was I think Dabo was a little reluctant to play his freshman wide receivers in that game. And then all of a sudden, after that loss to Georgia, he said, you know what, we're going to bring out Brian Wesco, we're going to bring out T.J. Moore, two of the highest rated wide receivers coming out of high school this year, and they both have made a major impact on that receiving core. With that receiving core now getting the upgrade. And remember last year with Clemson, coming into the year, in the first three games, they had lost their top two wide receivers. So they were really a depleted receiving core. Those guys are back. They've added in the freshman. Tremendous receiving core. Cade Klubnik has looked like you would have thought he would look coming out of high school. 17-2 ratio. Now that he's got the receiving core, they've got Phil Moffitt in the backfield. The defense, you know, I was surprised Stanford gained 230 yards on them in the first half. But other than that, they've been really good, and they've got plenty of talent there. So it's a very dangerous Clemson team. I look at the rest of their schedule. At Virginia Tech, ironically, Enter Sandman, is the only place that they could potentially lose, I think. I do think they beat Pitt on the road, and I've got Clemson playing in the ACC title game.
Yeah, no, I think that is a great pick. Miami is sitting there as well. They've had a couple little bit of officiating help along the way. The replay guys have been, I would say, kind to them. But overall level of play outside of that with Cam Ward at the controls, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think what's going to happen with Miami this week, Steve, is you're going to see them look the best they have all season. There's not going to be a close game. I think they go on the road and get this one.
Yeah.
Louisville's pass defense has been a little suspect, at least in my mind. I thought Louisville got outplayed by Georgia Tech. Notre Dame, they trailed by 2 touchdowns. Smooth, they lost by 7 at home. And they need a late touchdown to get past Virginia. Miami's had a week off. I think they feel fortunate that they're 6-0 after the Virginia Tech and Cal games. I mean, Cal, they needed a 25-point comeback. But with Cam Ward, Damian Martinez, and a very confident group, I look for Miami to play their best game of the year this week.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think they've put themselves in that spot, and I think they will play exactly the way you thought they would play. Tennessee has hit a little bit of a skid here at this point, and the odd part to me is, with Josh Heupel's mind, it's the offense. I think the defense has been playing pretty well. What's been your thought on them, especially with the matchup with Alabama?
Yeah, and, you know, with Tennessee, the key for a Josh Heupel offense, everybody thinks it's a pass game. It's actually the run game.
If they're
running for 250 yards, then guess what? Everything's wide open. Teams have to bring another guy in the box. That gives you a lot of one-on-ones, and that's when their offense is so explosive, 69, 51, 71 points the first three games. But the last three games have all been under 200 yards rushing, and that's where their offense tends to struggle. And I think Bama's got the players in the defensive front seven to control Tennessee's run game and put the onus on Nico Iamaleava. And, you know, when you look at Tennessee, they should have been down probably 17-0 at the half to Florida. Florida had four drives inside the red zone. They fumbled at the one-yard line, got stopped on downs, kicked a field goal, and had it taken off the board for too many men on the field, and only had 3 points at the half. So they could have actually lost to Florida last week on top of losing to Arkansas the week before. Now, I'm not going to say Alabama's been dominant the last 2 weeks. In fact, ever since halftime of the Georgia game, they haven't looked good the last 10 quarters. But I've seen Alabama against Georgia. I know they're capable of playing it. And I'll take Jalen Milroe over the freshman quarterback. I think Alabama's a better team, goes into Tennessee and comes out of there with a win.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I mentioned Oregon-Ohio State earlier. What Ohio State is massively talented. We know that. What's been your thought on them to this point?
You know, it's the same question I had coming into the year, Steve. Defensive line, they've got so many top draft picks there. You would expect that defensive line to be getting 4 or 5 sacks every single game.
Right.
How many sacks they have against Oregon? None. And on the offensive line, you know, they've got the talent there, but they're not overwhelming. Last week, as you mentioned, Boise ran for more yards against Oregon than Ohio State did. So I think it's the line play has been a little disappointing. And I would say, to me, it's the defensive line does not add up to the sum of the parts. They have really good guys on the defensive line. The NFL's going to love these guys, but they're not playing like it.
Right. And that's exactly what we were talking about the other day. That's been a surprise. If I just give you the names, you would assume they're playing great. Yet when you watch them, they're playing well, but not great. Is that fair?
Yes, not dominant. And you would expect them to be a dominant. Remember that South Carolina-Kentucky game?
Yeah.
I don't know if you got a chance to watch it, but South Carolina's defensive front just chewed up Kentucky.
Yeah,
Kentucky couldn't.
Indeed.
Every time their quarterback stepped back to pass, he was under pressure. They couldn't run the ball for an inch. And South Carolina's defensive line really impressed me in that game. That's what I would expect out of Ohio State on a weekly basis.
Hey, by the way, down in the Dome, Tech will take on Notre Dame. What's been your thought on those two teams to this point?
And if Notre Dame keeps losing players every single week, it seems like they lose a different starter. But they're playing well. And I like the fact that Riley Leonard, remember he didn't have a touchdown pass the first couple of games. Now he's up to 6 on the year. They're taking care of business. They're playing well. With Georgia Tech, I think they play above the sum of their parts. You know, they're one where they play better than the overall talent that they have with Brent Key. They're always dangerous as a dog. But I don't know if they're up to the talent level at Notre Dame. So I like the Irish to win this week. But I've been impressed with both teams.
You are a gem. Thank you so much for the time you gave us today, because look, you're always working on something and you always carve out a few minutes for us, and I appreciate it so much.
Steve, it's always great talking to you, my friend. Thanks for having me on, and good luck in the upcoming weeks.
Appreciate it, and we'll talk soon, I hope.
All right. Sounds good, Steve.
The outstanding Phil Steele. joining us on the show today. And this half hour being brought to you by Brewers Outlet. Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports domestics microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drinks, lots and lots of snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. Six great flavors of slushies, pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. It is all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
October is SUV month. SUV month at a Sunbury Motors Ford.
Sun, ride with the sun, Sunbury Motors.
Pick from 32 new Ford Escapes and 25 new Ford Bronco Sports, both discounted $4,000. And they're on sale starting at just $28,965. Choose from 19 of the totally redesigned 2025 Ford Explorer that comfortably seats 7 passengers, and they're reduced $5,000 and priced from only $39,230. Sunbury Motors, located in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, proudly owned by the Mertz family for 109 years. Hurry, sale ends October 31st.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street, Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, boat, motorcycle, RV, multitude of insurance needs. And because of that, you need to have pros that can handle it all. That's Purdy Insurance. And they'll do everything they can to save you money. And that is so important. So important that you can get all that. I mean, you know, there are times you can go over state lines. You're allowed to do it. They'll do it. There are times when you need, you know, when you can do bundles because you can do it. Yeah. I mean, just a lot of ways to save you money. And they do it. To their credit, they can get it done. I'm going to get to Tony Bennett in a moment. I'm going to get to Tony Bennett here in a moment. If you are a sports fan and just enjoy a sport watching it, and you don't have a dog in the hunt, last night's Guardians-Yankees game was tremendous theater. Now, if you're a Yankee fan, it was crushing to see how it played out. But look at how it did play out last night. This is why it resonates so much on TV, why they're paying such high rights fees to carry sports, because of the unpredictability of it. I mean, you don't know. And last night, the Guardians, they're down 1-0. Okay? But then they hit a home run. They're up 2-1. They tack on a run, 3-1. Now they got Clase out there. Now, Clase's been great as a closer all season, although Detroit got to him in one of the games in that series. And you got Aaron Judge, who's 0 for life in the playoffs. I mean, he has done nothing meaningful in the playoffs since 2020, but not last night. No. He followed up that home run that helped put the game away in game two and hits a two-run homer to tie the game dramatically. I think it was a 1-2 pitch. It was just tremendous. And then Stanton, who's having an A-Rod Barry Bonds postseason, in other words, after a whole bunch of bad ones, he's having a great one, comes right back-to-back home runs, and they take the lead. The Yankees have them, and they tack on, for good measure, an insurance run in the ninth inning. And then this happens. It was unbelievable last night. Joyeux Noël. I mean, it was unbelievable what, you know, to see this moment in the ninth inning last night.
Oh my goodness! Big Christmas has tied it! The ultimate present under the tree! Oh my goodness! John Kinsey Noel! Biggest swing of his life!
The ball was destroyed. Was destroyed. I mean, just absolutely crushed. Joyeux Noël. I mean, come on. It was just phenomenal. Okay? And then they get to the 10th inning, and guess what? We saw something in the 10th inning last night we hadn't seen in a year. You know what that is, Todd?
I feel like I should, but it's not coming to me.
A pitcher working from the windup.
Oh.
Because remember, there's nobody put on second base.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? So here is Tom Hamilton. Tom Hamilton's a friend and has been a friend for 30 years. He's the voice of the Guardians. Here's the Noel call on Guardians radio. Okay? From last night. So hopefully we got it here.
Oh! Swing!
I mean, and then they get to David Fry. Okay? Now David Fry. He comes up in the bottom of the 10th inning. Okay? Runner on base.
Swung on, hit high, hit deep to left. There she goes!
Yeah, I mean, if you're just a fan, no dog in the hunt, the pendulum swings of a meaningful game are incredible. Incredible. And again, you know, obviously, you know, Matt is a Yankee fan, the whole thing. I mean, you know, at least I had to tell him to stop screaming at the kids today. But that's just... And they weren't doing anything wrong. But if you're just a fan of sports, that's just a great game.
Do you know what time I found out the Indians or the Guardians won?
Nope.
About 11:30 at night. I saw the Aaron Judge homer. I saw the Giancarlo Stanton homer. And I have to do a little thing. SU has like a radio show, a high school football radio show, and I run over to Buffalo Wild Wings every Thursday. Game was over by the time I got back, didn't look up, and then I saw that stuff at 11, like on the 11 o'clock news, and I was so mad.
Well, it was
so mad I missed it.
Well, I was watching the game at the field last night before I had to do the Thursday night show for the network, And in fact, I was sitting there, and I'm just watching. And, you know, I'm watching by myself. Roger comes over, and he says, Roger Corey says, are you all right? I said, Roger, I'm watching the game. He goes, oh. I said, I'm not staring off into space. I'm looking at the TV up here. Right? And so I'm watching it. Right? The show's over. I wanted to go over and see my granddaughter, you know, 30 minutes. She's 6 years old. She's doing gymnastics, right? So it's not that far from the field. So when it was over, I went over to watch that. So I was listening to Tom Hamilton on the radio driving over. When I left to drive home, that's when Judge hit the two-run homer off Class A. That's when Stanton hit the home run off Class A. So when I got home, I thought, well, we'll just watch the end of it. Oh, am I glad I did.
Good choice.
I'm like, what the heck, we'll watch the end of it. I mean, I didn't even watch anything of the Saints-Broncos last night, so I saw nothing of that.
I'm not even sure. I think I know the Broncos won, but no, I didn't watch 1 second of it.
I think they won 33-10. It was actually easy.
Oh.
for Sean Payton, a great return for him to New Orleans. But the it was just great theater. Right? Now, Matt would disagree. He thinks, you know, the Guardians cheated, and, you know, it's kind of sad to hear all this. Why? No?
He actually handled it better than you think he would.
Really?
Yeah, he likes how they, I saw in X, he likes how they handled the post game last night, and he thinks they'll bounce right back.
I don't even know who's pitching tonight.
I think Gill.
Luis Gill?
Yeah.
Okay.
The Indians had not announced a starter yet when I looked. I mean, it was really early this morning, so they could have by now.
Well, let me take a quick look, because usually they post the lineups between the two playoff teams. They'll post what the lineups happen to be. Oh, good, inside the trade of Devontae Adams. I have two words. Who cares? What? They posted lineups. Luis Gill against Gavin Williams. Gavin Williams gets the ball tonight. So Gill, who was good in the regular season, especially pitching away from home. He was 9-3 away from home this year. He's pretty good. 29 starts. To his credit, pitched well. I mean, nothing wrong with how he pitched this year. 15-7. Nice ERA, 3.50.
I was going to say, the only hiccup I remember is that little stretch like at the end of May when he got, yeah. I think he wasn't used to throwing that much.
All right. Gavin Williams, who has not won a single game at home this year. I mean, how about that? He's 0-7 at home this year. 0-7.
That's hard to do with a good team.
With a 6.55 ERA. What a great choice. This will be one of those where he comes out and you go, whoa, where did that come from? Let's see. He hasn't been. This is a bullpen game, obviously. I mean, although, you know what? No. He went 5 1/3 against Tampa, 5 innings against the Twins, 5 2/3 against the Cardinals in his last 3 outings. Right, they're all starts. So everything's been a start for him. 16 games and 16 starts with a 3-10 record. I'm impressed.
I wonder if this is the Alex Cobb spot since he got hurt.
Probably. 4.86 ERA. He's 0-7 at home at 6.55. I mean, if they win tonight, you're like, whoa, how about that?
I just, you know, when you read off those numbers, it just, then this is, it's the type of guy that ends up throwing five innings of one right. hit ball in a game right. like this.
and it lifts all the boats. You're yeah. like, hey, how about this? We didn't sink. This is great. And we'll talk about Tony Bennett in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Try this on for size before I get to the Tony Bennett story. Guess who spent about an hour, hour and a half in State College yesterday? I mean, most of it was getting his jet refueled. Elon Musk. Really? Like, huh? I mean, you know, that opportunity for that great business idea that you had, Todd. I mean, if I'd known, I would have pitched it to him.
You imagine going into Sheets out there or something, and Elon needs a cup of coffee while the jet's being refueled? The old that would do.
By the way, I have an idea. Can we talk for a second? All right, so, Tony Bennett. This says it all. He abruptly decides to step away. I was at basketball practice yesterday. We were like, Tony Bennett's stepping aside? And the first thing we did find out was that it was not a health issue. It was what we thought it was. Quote, I don't think I'm equipped in this new way to coach, and it's a disservice to you if you keep doing that. I'm sure that this is the right step. I wish I could have gone longer. I really do, but it was time. So when I looked at myself, I realized I'm no longer the best coach to lead this program in the current environment. So if you're going to do it, you've got to be all in. You've got to have everything. If you do it half-hearted, it's not fair to the university or to the young men. So looking at it, that's what made me step down. And again, the current environment is NIL. The current environment's a transfer portal. Right? It says, the game and college athletics is not in a healthy spot, Bennett said. It's not. And it needs to change. I was equipped to do the job the old way. That's who I am, he continued. But there needs to be change. It's going to be closer to a professional model. There's got to be collective bargaining. There's got to be restrictions on salary pool a team can spend. He says there has to be transfer regulation restrictions. There has to be some restrictions on agent involvement on some of the young guys. He's not wrong. We've talked about this before. Right now, the college game is freer than the pro game because of collective bargaining. And that's what I've been talking about with Charlie Baker. I have no idea if Charlie Baker is even remotely capable of running the NCAA. Zero. None. Okay? But as the former governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, he knows the political game. He's the one that's been going to Washington. He not only knows who to talk to, but also how to talk to them about the possibility of an antitrust exemption. Or at least antitrust relief, to then allow the NCAA to then put together a collective bargaining agreement with whatever entity the players choose. Because that's the only way this is going to go. And it's not going to be perfect. It will not be perfect. Remember, if you have a collective bargaining, it also means people can strike. But it also is something that needs to be done because there needs to be structure. There really, the structure in college sports is, to use an old Joe Paterno term, too loosey-goosey right now. And to me, that's that, and that's the big problem with college sports. There's just not enough structure. When the Tony Bennett's and the Jay Wright's and the Nick Saban's and the Mike Krzyzewski's and the Roy Williams look around and go, you know what? I don't think so. That's a problem. That's a problem.
The cynic in me says Tony got a look at his NIL budget and didn't like it.
But you, no, but you know what? Like, this is where I give James Franklin a lot of credit, and the same thing with Mike Rhodes. They've adapted. They've adapted because they knew they had to. Tony kept trying. It sounds like Tony kept trying to adapt, and he finally looked around. Because, look, there are a lot of people out there that are miserable with their jobs. I got it. The difference is Tony has the means, after being miserable at his job, to walk away.
Yeah.